urine, and when I finally got to the car and checked the time, my anxiety spiked to a record high. Had we really been here for 20 minutes?
Guys!
I yelled, waving my arms at both Ian and Rowan. They were standing side by side at the tomb. How had that thing kept their attention for so long?
Guys!
Ian glanced over, and I tapped an imaginary watch on my wrist.
We need to go, now!
He languidly pulled his phone out of his pocket before he and Rowan began jogging toward me. I hurried around the back of the car, something unexpected catching my eye.
Oh no.
The tailpipe now sagged lazily to the ground, the tip completely submerged in a puddle of water. I ducked down to assess the damage.
Sorry, we lost track of time, Rowan said,
his breath heavy as he splashed toward me.
Good thing I'm a fast driver.
He caught sight of my crouched form.
Oh no, did the pipe come loose?
I think we lost a bolt. We have to fix it before we leave.
Rowan crossed his arms nervously.
Any chance we could fix it later? I don't want to risk getting you to the airport late.
I fought it, but the practical side of me won out. If the tailpipe were to disconnect as we were driving, that would be it. No workable car, no airport, no Italy, and no Lena. I had to find at least a short-term solution. I jumped to my feet.
As long as we can get it off the road, we'll be fine. What do you have that we could tie it up with?
Rowan tapped his chin, looking at the bumper stickers as if they might be able to help him out.
Duct tape? Dental floss? I might have a bungee cord somewhere.
I shook my head. It has to be metal or it will melt through, and we'll have to stop and do it again.
How about these?
Rowan pulled a pair of headphones out of his back pocket, the cords tangled into a nest.
Aren't the wires inside made out of copper?
Ian's mouth dropped open.
Absolutely not. Those are sure headphones. They're like $200.
You're offering me your $200 headphones? I asked, shocked.
I knew Rowan was nice, but this was over the top. He tossed them to me.
They were a guilt present, he said, bitterness ringing through his voice.
Divorce kid perks. His shoulders sagged slightly, and Ian gave him a surprised look. But it was pretty clear Rowan didn't want any follow-up questions. It was way too generous of an offer, but I had to take him up on it anyway. I had too much at stake. I gave him a nod of thanks, then dropped down to the ground.
Ian, hold the tailpipe up for me.
He obeyed, and I crawled halfway under the bumper, water seeping into my shorts as I felt my way around. I was used to being the family mechanic. The summer after Walter turned 16, my brothers and I had a tire blowout on a freeway near our house. I'd dug out the owner's manual, and by the time my dad had showed up, I was covered in grease and the spare tire was on. Unlike school, cars had just always made sense to me. There was something comforting about the fact that the answer was always just a popped hood or wrench twist away. The underside of Rowan's car was coated in mud, and it took me way longer than it should have to attach the tailpipe. Nerves were not my friend. What felt like an hour later, I jumped to my feet, anxiety rippling through my center.
Got it. Let's get out of here.
Maybe you should change before you get back in Rowan's car, Ian said, looking at my clothes. You look like a mud ball.
We don't have time, Rowan said, heading for his door.
Hop in, mudball.
I was bouncing around the back seat, trying to ignore the fact that the numbers on Clover's dashboard clock were moving at warp speed, when Rowan suddenly let loose with a word that sounded mispronounced.
Feck!
Feck?
I looked up.
What's wrong?
Rowan pointed out the windshield.
That's what's wrong.
I spiked forward anxiously, and what I saw tied my stomach into a neat bow. About a quarter mile up was a tractor. But not just any tractor. This one was massive, spilling out over both lanes of the road like a giant lumbering lobster. It definitely wasn't in a hurry. Rowan eased up on the gas and coasted up to it.
"We have to get around it," I said. "Were tractors allowed to just take over the road?"
"Addie, don't panic, don't panic." We were already late. How was this happening?
"How?"
Rowan raked his hand through his hair. "It's too big to even pull over to let us pass. It takes up the whole road."
"There's no way it can stay on the road for long," Ian said calmly. But his knee burst into full bounce. "Rowan, they can't stay on the road for long, right?"
"Well," Rowan said. He grimaced. "Maybe I should turn around. There's got to be another route to the freeway." The suggestion made me nervous. Another route sounded messy and risky. A rumble behind us made us all whip around.
"Feck!"
This time it was Ian who yelled it. The tractor's twin was coming up the road behind us. Just as big, just as slow.
"What is this, a tractor parade?" I demanded.
Tractor number two was pumpkin orange, and the driver returned our scowls with a cheery wave.
"Great, tractor buddies," Rowan said. "I'm going to talk to them."
Ian rolled his window down, and before Rowan and I realized what he meant, he'd scrambled out of the still-moving car, stumbling when he hit the ground.
"Ian, get back in here,"
I yelled. But he ran full speed to the first tractor, mud flipping up behind him.
"Wow, Bennetts don't mess around, do they?" Rowan said.
"Especially not that one," I said. The driver caught sight of Ian and slowed. He jumped up onto the step, moving his arms animatedly as he talked to the driver. I was about to climb out after him when Ian jumped off the steps and ran back to us.
"He can't get off the road for another 10 minutes, but he said there's a shortcut to the freeway. He's going to point when we get close."
"Yes," Rowan sighed with relief.
10 minutes?
I said, looking nervously at the clock. It was already 9:39. The procession started up again, sending a splatter of mud onto our windshield. The second we hit the freeway, Rowan slammed on the accelerator.
"Rowan, drive!" I yelled.
"I'm going as fast as I can," Rowan said shakily. "Addie, I think we can still make it. You aren't checking a bag, right? And maybe there will be a delay." I wanted to believe him, but the adrenaline coursing through my body wouldn't let me. Flights were never delayed when you wanted them to be. It was only when you had an important connection in an airport that was the size of an island nation that you got delayed. And according to my phone's GPS, we were still a solid 20 miles from the airport. Time was gaining on us. 10:16. Clover hit a pothole, and the pile of Rowan's belongings slid into my side. I fought it back, my heart a jackhammer. I felt like one of the bottle rockets my brothers and I used to set off on the 4th of July. Another few seconds, and I was going to shoot out of the car's flimsy soft top.
"It's okay, Addie, we're going to make it," Ian said, his fingers wrapped tightly around the grab handle.
He'd said it 4 times now. 10:18. It hadn't really been a full 2 minutes, had it?
"This can't be happening,"
the words burst out of my mouth, as frantic as I felt. This time no one even attempted to comfort me. We were all in the same state of panic despair. It had taken us a solid 10 minutes to even get to the detour road, and what the tractor driver had failed to mention to Ian was that our shortcut was actually a narrow, bumpy dirt road that slowed us to a pace just above tractor speed.
"Airport!" Rowan yelled.
I exhaled in relief. A large green sign read, "Airport, Air Fort," the Gaelic word accompanied by a picture of a jet. We weren't there, but we were close. So long as I made it to the airport an hour before my 11:30 flight, I should be fine. Rowan hit the gas like a NASCAR driver, unfortunately timing it with a sudden pothole. We hit the road, hard, and suddenly a loud screeching noise erupted from under the car.
No!
I screamed.
What? What was that?
Ian's fidgeting was so bad he could have been dancing a tango. I turned to look out the back window, but I couldn't see anything. It sounded like the tailpipe was dipping up and down off the road, screeching every time it hit asphalt. The $200 headphones were not going to hold for long.
Please hold, please hold, please hold, I prayed aloud.
Bam! A clanging noise filled the car, and I shot to the rear window to see sparks flying out the back. The car behind us slammed on its horn and swerved into the next lane.
No!
I yelled again.
What, Addie, what? Rowan said. Did it fall?
I crumpled into my seat, tears filming over my eyes.
We have to pull over.
Rowan and Ian both visibly deflated, and Rowan pulled to the side. I jumped out. The shoulder was narrow, and cars passed by much too close for comfort as I ran to the back and crouched down. The tailpipe was barely connected. Rowan's headphones dangling helplessly. How was this happening?
10:21.
Ian's hands fell to his sides, his voice shaky. The misery in his voice said it all. 10:21. There was no way we'd make it on time. I'd missed my flight. I fell back onto my butt in the mud. A large, shuddery sob worked its way to my throat and stuck. Ian crouched down next to me and rhythmically patted my back.
Addie, it's okay. We'll get you another flight. I'll pay for it myself if I have to.
I feel so bad, Rowan said, crouching down on my other side.
I should have accounted for tractors. I can help pay, too.
I can't believe this, I said weakly, tears flooding me.
A plane passed overhead, its engines a dull, painful roar. Insult to injury. And I knew the real reason I was upset. All this time I'd been counting down to the exact moment that I could unburden myself by talking to Lena. And now that was delayed. My secret pressed hard on the walls of my chest, burning hot. I couldn't wait one more second. I jumped to my feet, leaving the guys behind as I fumbled for my phone. What was I going to say?
Hi, Lena, do you have a second? Because not only did I just miss my flight, but I have something important to tell you.
Telling Lena about Cubby from the side of a freeway in Ireland was not what I'd had in mind, but it was going to have to do. Where would I even start? If I absolutely had to pinpoint the day things started with Cubby, I guess I'd start with the night he jumped into my car. I was waiting for Ian after football practice, like I usually did. Rain spattered merrily onto the windshield, and I hugged my knees tightly up against the steering wheel. I refused to turn on the heat on principle alone. It was July. Why couldn't Seattle act like it?
Ian, come on,
I muttered, looking at the school doors. My friend and soccer teammate Olive had invited me to her house for one of her famous B-movie showings. She had a way of making the worst movies spectacularly entertaining, and Ian was absolutely going to make me late. Suddenly a tiger sweatshirt appeared in the passenger window, and the door yanked open.
Finally, what took you so long?
I complained, reaching for my seatbelt as he slid into the front seat.
Next time I'm going to leave you.
You'd really leave me?
I startled at the voice. It was Cubby, freshly showered with rosy cheeks and droplets of water clinging to the ends of his hair. He smiled, his bright eyes meeting mine.
You're staring at me like I'm a ghost. Why?
Because... My words tried to catch up with my brain. Because I think about you all the time and now you're in my car.
I guess practice is over?
I finally managed.
Brilliant.
He grabbed the seat adjuster, reclining a few inches.
So glad it's over. Practice was brutal.
His head dropped, and if I weren't so shocked to have him in my car, I probably would have noticed how spent he looked. Ian had mentioned something about the football coach being exceptionally hard on Cubby this year. I guess it was getting to him.
And Ian might be a while. Coach cornered him for strategizing.
He paused, his gaze heavy and invigorating all at once.
Do you still want to hang out? We could go somewhere.
A hot spiral formed in my stomach. Is this really happening? Do things you daydream about actually happen? Where? I asked, careful to keep my voice even. He looked out the passenger window and traced his finger over the fogging glass.
Anywhere.
It took all my effort not to slam my foot on the accelerator. When it came to Cubby, that was my real problem. I never stopped to think. Not even once.
I missed my flight. My parents can't know, and Ian and I got in a fight, and there were tractors, and Ian's going to a festival, and Lena, I missed my flight.
Instead of the calm explanation I'd planned on, everything came out in one big tumbling blob, my words piling on top of each other.
Addie, slow down, Lena said sternly. I need you to slow down.
What's going on?
It was Ren, Lena's boyfriend in the background. He was always in the background these days. Did they ever spend time apart? I wished it didn't bug me so much.
Just a minute, she hushed him. I'm trying to figure that out. Addie, what is going on with you?
I told you, I just missed my flight.
Tears poured from my closed eyelids, and my voice sounded as shaky as Rowan's car. She blew into the phone, sending hot static into my ear.
Yeah, I got that part. But I mean, what is going on with you? You've been avoiding my calls for the past week and a half, and now you're standing on the side of the road having a breakdown? This isn't just about the flight, or the wedding. Why have you been avoiding me?
Cubby dropped down like a marionette, swinging in the space between us. Of course I hadn't fooled Lena. She'd always had this sixth sense about when I needed her. Half the time I didn't even need to call, she just showed up. And evasion wasn't going to work, not when she'd cornered me like this. I took a deep breath.
Lena, there's something I need to tell you. About this summer. I was going to tell you as soon as I got to Florence, but...
Is this about Cubby Jones? She asked impatiently.
What?
I cringed, my shoulders shooting up. Had word really spread to Italy?
Who told you?
Now Lena's voice was all business.
No one told me anything. You've been hiding something since July. Every time we talked, you were just barely holding back. And then you kept casually dropping his name like, oh, remember when we were in pottery class and Cubby's pot exploded in the kiln? Not that great of a story, Addie.
My head fell into my hands. I'd never been very good at lying, doubly so when it was to someone I loved. Walter claimed I was the worst liar in the world. My dad claimed that was a compliment. Yeah, I guess I was sort of trying to tell you, but not really. There was a long pause, and I pressed the phone closer to my ear, desperately trying to read her silence. Could silence sound judgmental? I turned to look at Ian. He and Rowan both slouched miserably against the car, Ian's hands deep in his pockets.
So which airport should I fly into, Shannon or Dublin?
It took me a moment to realize what Lena was saying.
Wait. Did you just ask which airport you should fly into?
Yes,
she exhaled impatiently.
That makes the most sense, right? You just told me that you missed your flight and your parents can't know, so obviously I'm coming to you.
You'd fly here?
I'd clearly missed the jump somewhere.
But how would you...
I brushed away the fresh flood of tears staining my cheeks. Lena made another impatient noise that was distinctly Italian-flavored.
Listen to me. I have tons of frequent flyer miles, and Ren does too, and we've both been dying to visit Ireland. I'll just tell Howard that you need me. You stick with Ian, and I'll get to you as fast as I can.
I shut my eyes, letting Lena's plan unfurl. I stay with Ian. Lena comes to me. Maybe our parents don't find out. Maybe I still play soccer. Maybe I figure out a way to make Ian stop looking at me like I'm a burr hitchhiking on his sock. It was the best possible plan for the scenario.
Are you sure? I managed. Flying to Ireland is not a small deal.
Flying to Ireland is not a huge deal. Not when friendship is involved. And Addie, it's going to be okay. Whatever it is, it's going to be okay.
I wanted to tell her what this moment meant to me, but the words dammed up in my throat. She'd come through with a solution I hadn't even considered. It made me feel bad about ever having doubted her.
Thank you,
I finally managed between tears.
You're welcome.
Sorry you don't get to taste gelato, but at least we'll be together. That's the important part, right?
Right.
I opened my eyes to a brilliant swath of sunlight. A small pink bubble formed in my chest. Precarious, but hopeful all the same.
No, absolutely not.
That was all it took for Ian to snuff the spark in my chest.
This is my trip, our trip. It's once in a lifetime. We've been planning this for months now.
Ian edged toward the car protectively. Rowan had managed to find a wire hanger in the trunk, and I'd used it to refasten the bumper.
Which is why I'm in this position to begin with, I snapped back.
Every time a car went by, I felt like I was about to get sucked onto the road.
If you hadn't messed with the original plan, then none of this would be happening.
My voice was high and whiny, but I didn't care. His trip had cost me Italy.
Do you think I wanted to miss my flight?
Though the more I thought about Lena's plan, the more it made sense. Our best chance of surviving this trip unscathed was to stick together.
Ian, come on.
It does make a lot of sense. Don't your chances of not getting caught go way down if you're together?
Rowan asked, echoing my reasoning.
I looked at him gratefully, but he was completely zoned in on my brother.
Ian kicked at the ground angrily. Fine, fine. But listen to me. This is my trip. No fighting, no Addie drama, no stuff about Cubby, got it?
I do not want to talk about Cubby, I yelled. You are the one who keeps bringing him up.
A large truck whooshed by and blew my hair around my face.
Whoa.
Rowan stepped between us, palms up in stop signs. We need to establish something right away. I'm completely for this new plan, but I'm not spending the next few days trapped in the middle of whatever's going on between you. If we do this, there has to be a truce. No fighting. To my surprise, Ian calmed almost immediately. His mouth turned down apologetically.
You're right. Addie, I won't talk about Cubby if you won't.
Really? It was that easy?
Okay,
I said warily.
Okay?
Rowan's eyes darted back and forth between us.
So everyone's good?
Good was a little generous, but I managed to nod and so did Ian. It may have been a forced truce, but it was a truce. It would have to be enough. We were 15 minutes into the new plan. The road spooled out in front of us. Everyone still slightly shell-shocked when one aspect of my life suddenly became startlingly clear. I needed a restroom. Immediately. I elbowed my way into the front of the car.
Rowan, could you please stop next chance you get? I really need a bathroom.
Ian whirled around, his face tense.
But our next stop isn't until Dingle.
How far is that?
I asked, looking down at his map. Dingle was a finger-shaped peninsula that reached out into the Pacific Ocean, a good 100 miles away. Definitely beyond the capacity of my bladder.
Are you joking?
I ventured. He set his mouth firmly. He wasn't joking.
We have this trip all mapped out. The tailpipe and tractors have already put us way behind. Ian, that's crazy. The last time I had access to a bathroom, I thought I was going to Italy. Either you let me have a bathroom break, or I pee on the back seat.
He threw a hand up dismissively. Great, pee back there. It will be like the coffee can incident on the way to Disneyland.
Ian! I growled.
The coffee can incident may be a part of Bennett road trip lore, but that didn't mean I had any interest in hearing about it all the time. Why couldn't my brothers ever let anything go?
What's the coffee can incident? Rowan asked, his eyes hinting at a smile.
What do you think? I snapped.
You get the basic elements, right? Ian said. Road trip. Coffee can. Girl who...
Ian!
I threw my arms around the seat to cover his mouth.
Tell Rowan that story and I swear I will never speak to you again.
Ian's laugh rumbled through my hands, and he pulled them off, but the mood already felt softer. At least the coffee can story was good for something.
Actually, I need to put a call into my mom, so a stop would work great for me. How about we stop in Limerick?
Rowan pointed to a sign. Limerick, 20 kilometers.
Perfect, I said gratefully. I could handle 20 kilometers.
Turned out that 20 kilometers of grass-sprouting Irish road was very different from 20 kilometers of, say, any other possible road, and by the time Rowan pulled off the road into a gas station, I had to pee so badly I was practically immobilized.
Out, 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 I yelled.
Ian turned, his hand on the headrest.
You have 5 minutes, and this is the absolute last stop before Dingle.
Just move, I pleaded.
Ian jumped gracefully out of the car and beelined for the convenience store. I did my best to follow, but halfway out I lost one of my shoes, and when I tried to reach for it, I lost my balance and belly flopped onto the ground, which was not ideal for the bladder situation. I rolled to my side. Rowan's sweater was studded with gravel and my elbow screamed in pain.
Addie, are you okay?
Rowan sprinted around the car to help me up.
Where's your shoe?
No time, I managed. My bare foot throbbed as I sprinted for the store, but my bladder was now giving me the 20-second countdown. This was no time for protective footwear. Inside, I wasted a good 5 seconds stumbling through the aisles of unfamiliar junk food before realizing there was no restroom inside. Finally, I hurried up to the register. An older woman with braids wrapped around her head had her hip to the counter.
I told her, marry him or don't, but don't come crying to me.
Hi, love, the clerk said, latching his gaze onto me eagerly.
Save me, his eyes pleaded. What can I do for you? Where's the bathroom?
I didn't have time to space out the words. The situation was too desperate. He understood the urgency, barking out directions in admirable alacrity.
Toilets outside, around back, just that way.
I sprinted past Ian, filling up a basket with neon-colored caffeine bombs. My stomach was literally sloshing. Finally, I made it to the back, but when I yanked on the handle of the women's restroom, it didn't budge.
Hello?
I called, banging my fists on the door.
Occupied,
replied a cheery Irish voice.
Could you hurry up, please?
I jiggled the knob desperately. I was going to pee my pants. I was absolutely going to pee my pants. Suddenly, the men's room door shifted, and I hurled myself at it as a bearded man stepped out.
Oh, men's room, love, he said nervously.
I'm American,
I said. Like that explained things. I'm American, so I don't have to follow gender conventions. He seemed to accept it as a valid explanation. Either that, or he thought I was crazy. And he darted out of my way. I quickly locked the door and turned around. Even in the awful lighting, the floor was disgusting. Damp and covered in wet toilet paper slime. I instinctively clamped my hand over my nose and mouth.
Addie, you can do this,
I instructed myself motivationally. I had to. My only other option was to wait it out in the back of a clown car until Dingle. By the time I'd hopped my way through the bathroom and then back out again, Rowan was at the car, his phone pressed to his ear. I quickly darted back into the store and picked up the largest box of sugar puffs I could find and carried it to the counter. The clerk's situation hadn't changed much.
So I told her if she wants to live in a trash heap, that's fine. She just can't expect us to...
Can I point you to the milk?
The clerk lunged to take my cereal, almost losing his Santa Claus-looking spectacles in the process.
How long had he been trapped there?
I shook my head. Thanks, but I'm on a road trip. We wouldn't have any place to store it.
Interest sparked in his eyes.
I took a road trip or two myself back when I was your age. Where are you headed?
The braided-haired woman made a little huffing noise, shifting her bags from one hand to the other so I'd be sure to know what an inconvenience I was being.
Right now we're going to Dingle, but after that we're going to a music festival.
Electric Picnic?
He asked.
You've heard of it?
Rowan and Ian had said Electric Picnic was a big deal, but I had no way of knowing if they meant big deal in their alternative music world or big deal in the real world.
Real world it was.
Absolutely. I'll pray for your parents,
he winked.
I've never been myself, but my daughter went last year. I get the feeling I only heard a very censored version of what she did there. But of course you know the stories.
His eyes crinkled at the edges.
People getting married in unicorn costumes, outdoor hot tubs made from old clawfoot bathtubs, rave parties in the forest, a sunken double-decker bus, petting zoos made entirely of three-legged animals, that sort of thing. Everyone's in costume and acting badly.
Was he joking? He didn't look like he was joking. Plus, who could come up with a list like that on the spot?
I stared at him in horror.
You hadn't heard the stories, he said,
his eyes crinkling even more. This brought the need for secrecy to a whole new level of desperation. My parents would flip. It was one thing to sneak off to see a bunch of no-name sights in Ireland, but it was quite another to sneak away to a wild party. Getting caught would probably require them to come up with an entirely new category of punishments.
Well, I didn't mean to scare you.
He laughed at my expression.
Keep your head and you'll be fine. Is there a particular music act you're going to see?
I nodded, regaining my footing.
Keep your head.
So long as Cubby Jones wasn't involved, I could handle that.
My brother's going to see his favorite band. They're called Title Track.
Title Track! Their final show!
The woman interjected, clutching her hand to her chest.
You lucky, lucky girl, you!
I turned to her, aghast. She was a fan?
I love that first song of theirs. Aaron, what's it called? The one with the music video in the burren. Classic, the clerk said. We're definitely fans around here.
We're actually on a Title Track road trip. I just left the burren.
A Title Track road trip?
She looked like she was about to faint. She yanked on one braid.
What a wonderful idea, Aaron! Isn't that a wonderful idea?
Wonderful, he replied dutifully.
Yes, my brother is a huge fan. He's right.
I turned to point at Ian, but the store was empty.
Uh-oh. I'd better go. Thanks so much for the advice.
Stay hydrated, the man called after me as I rushed through the door. Take hand sanitizer, the woman yelled, and be careful out on the peninsula. Big storm coming today. One of the worst of the summer.
Thanks, I called over my shoulder.
The second I stepped outside, Rowan's voice punched me in the ears.
Mum, I told you, I'm not ready to talk about this. You said I had until the end of the summer, and that means 2 more weeks. And if you want to talk about Dad, call him. Mum, stop!
He hung up, then whirled around, his expression leaping with dismay. My first instinct was to bolt, but instead I stood there stupidly clutching my cereal box, resting my bare foot on my shoed one. I probably looked like I'd been eavesdropping. I mean, I had been eavesdropping. It just hadn't been on purpose. And now I was curious. What was Rowan not ready to talk about?
Hey, Addie, Rowan said weakly. Been there long?
Please say no, was written in a thought bubble over his head. I shook my head as I handed him the cereal.
Not long.
His face drooped sadly.
Fix this, my inner voice demanded.
My inner voice had a lot to say about other people's feelings. I looked around, trying to think of a way to lighten the mood.
So, remember when I belly flopped out of your car?
His face instantly brightened.
On average, how many times a day would you say you dive into parking lots?
I looked up at the gray sky, pretending to think.
3. Today's a slow day.
His smile increased. Then he looked down, kicking a rock toward me.
You know, Addie, you aren't at all what I expected.
Hmm, I said, folding my arms. He had a slight smile, so I was pretty sure he'd meant it kindly. But I wasn't positive.
Hmm, what? He asked.
I shrugged my shoulders. That was one of those compliments that could easily be an insult, like, did you do something different with your hair? It looks so nice. Meaning, it looked like crap before. Rowan's mouth twitched into a smile. I was talking too much. I steered us back on course.
If you don't mind me asking, what did you expect?
His dimple deepened.
Someone more average. I can see why Ian talks about you so much.
Surprise flooded me.
He told you about me?
But I thought you guys didn't talk about a lot of personal stuff.
Just the important things, Rowan said.
He told me you two are very close, which is why I'm a little confused that you guys are, He flourished his hand.
Fighting all the time?
I filled in.
It was a little surprising, he admitted.
He folded his arms, dropping his gaze down again. Anyway, I'm glad you came out here, because I have something to show you. He reached through the window into the back seat and pulled out the guidebook.
While you were in there, I checked the sites against Ian's map, and a lot of them are pretty close to each other. A few of them even double up with title track sites. And guess what? One of them is on the Dingle Peninsula, which is where we're headed next.
He handed me the guidebook, flipping open to an entry marked Dingle Peninsula. I clutched the pages tightly.
What about Ian? I said, glancing back toward the store.
I don't know if you've noticed, but every time my love life comes up, someone starts yelling.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
He grinned a cute lopsided smile that transplanted onto my face. I'll handle Ian.
Look, I technically could do the guidebook on my own. It's just that it feels a little...
He twisted his mouth.
Pathetic.
But if we do it together...
Maybe it's dumb.
It's not dumb, I said quickly. My flower ceremony at the Burren hadn't exactly been the life-changing experience I'd hoped for, but I did like the thought of having some dedicated time to cope with Cubby. Plus, Rowan was really putting himself out there. There was no way I was going to leave him hanging. I pitched my tone to sound more enthusiastic.
I mean, why not? Worst case, we see some interesting places. Best case, I leave Ireland with an unbroken heart.
Yeah, right. I didn't believe it for a second. His face split into a huge smile.
Thanks, Addie. You work on finding your shoe. I'll work on finding Ian. I'm sure I can talk him into this.
He took off across the parking lot at a happy sprint, and I turned to watch him. Was it possible that I'd managed to find the only person in the world who was more heartbroken than I was?
The Dingle Peninsula. If Ireland were a cake, and you the nervous recipient of something coming out of my oven, I would serve you a thick slice of dingle. Tart, sugary, chewy dingle. It's a combination of absolutely irresistible ingredients. Crushed velvet hills, roads disappearing into milky mist, jelly bean-hued buildings crammed together on winding roads, all blended and whipped together into a ladyfinger-shaped peninsula that you're going to want to dunk into a cold glass of milk. Now I know what you're wondering, Dove. What does this idyllic bit of perfection possibly have to do with the pathetic state of my heart? I'm so glad you asked.
And my, aren't you catching on nicely?
It's about the circle, love. The process. At some point,
Maybe it's already happened. You're going to wrestle your heartache into a sturdy brown box and then lug it all the way to the post office, where you'll drop it off with a huge sigh. Glad that's over, you'll think. Such a relief. You'll skip back home, your heart as airy as cotton candy, only to realize, with horror, that the heavy brown box is sitting on your front door. It was delivered back to you. Return to sender. Shipping incomplete. But I just did this, you'll think. I already dealt with it. I know you did. But you're going to have to do it again. Contrary to popular belief, getting over someone is not a one-time deal. It might be helpful to look at the process of heartache like you would a peninsula, one with a long looping road carrying you past a myriad of delights and wonders. Grief requires you to circle around the issue at hand, sometimes passing by it many, many times until it is no longer the destination, but just part of the landscape. The trick is, do not give in to despair. You are making progress, even if some days it feels like you're going in circles. Heartache homework. Find Inch Beach. Then walk out into the water as far as you dare. You'll get cold, then colder, then numb. And when you can't stand the cold for one more second, I want you to stand the cold for one more second. Are you surviving this moment of discomfort? Have there been other moments of pain or discomfort that you thought you couldn't survive? And yet you did. Interesting, pet. Interesting. Excerpt from Ireland for the Heartbroken, An Unconventional Guide to the Emerald Isle, 3rd edition. The storm hit just as we entered the peninsula. And by hit, I mean came at us as if we were trespassers that had to be forcibly shoved back to the mainland. There was no build-up either. One second it wasn't raining, and the next raindrops pummeled the roof so loudly they may as well have been on the inside of my skull. Rain slid down our windows in heavy sheets, and Rowan kept overcorrecting against the wind. "It's really bucketing down," he said nervously. "Hey, Rowan, I think we need to pull over," I said, gesturing to Ian. Ian balled up against the window, the green tint of his face highlighting his black eye. I'd seen Ian throw up more times than I could count, and he was exhibiting 4 out of 5 of the warning signs. Puke was imminent.
"I'm not sick, I just..." Ian started, but he couldn't even make it through the sentence before gritting his teeth.
"Pull over the next chance you get," I instructed Rowan, grabbing the empty cereal box and shoving it into Ian's hands. Ian was the poster child for motion sickness, but he was also the poster child for stubbornness. He never wanted to admit that things made him sick, which meant he was constantly doing things that made him sick. None of us had sat next to him on a roller coaster in years. "Just a little Irish holiday weather. I'm sure we'll be through it in no time." Rowan attempted nonchalance, but the wind blew at us again and he gasped, jerking the wheel as Ian doubled over. "Ian, you okay? You never told me you had motion sickness."
"I don't," Ian answered. "I must have eaten something bad at the wedding."
Sometimes I thought my brothers were incapable of admitting to weakness. "Rowan, he's lying. This is an ongoing condition. A windy road during a storm is the worst possible scenario." I turned away from Ian's scowl and pressed up to my blurry window, focusing on the view. Even without the storm's theatrics, the Dingle Peninsula was Ireland 2.0. The drama factor turned on and cranked as high as it would go. We were still on a narrow 2-lane road, but everything had been pumped up to Dr. Seuss level. On our left, neon green mountain peaks disappeared into pudding thick clouds, and to our right, a thick nest of rain rested on top of the ocean. Ian's phone chimed.
"Oh no. Text from Mom."
"What does it say?" He attempted to swivel his queasy face toward me, but the motion made him shudder.
"She wants us to check in when we land. I'll text her back in a few hours."
Suddenly a gush of wind blasted Clover,
bumping us off the road and into the shoulder. And this time, Rowan's choice of language was a bit more potent than feck.
"Rowan, you got this?"
I asked. He cranked frantically at the steering wheel, trying to regain equilibrium. But the hardest gale yet caught us on the opposite side. For a nanosecond, Clover favored her left two wheels. Ian lurched for the cereal box, dry heaving. I gagged. I could see Ian puke a million times and never get used to it. I patted him clumsily, keeping my face averted.
"It's okay, Ian. It's okay."
"Now I'm pulling over." Rowan pulled over to the foot-wide shoulder, then threw the car into park, collapsing over the steering wheel. Ian rolled his window down, sending in a spray of rain as he stuck his head outside.
"Well, that was traumatizing," I said, taking a few deep breaths of my own.
Suddenly the car began vibrating.
"What?"
Ian started, his eyes wide, but just then a massive tour bus sliced around the corner.
"Hang on,"
Rowan warned. I pulled Ian inside and we all braced for death as we watched the bus narrowly miss our front bumper. A large swell of water slammed into the car. We all screamed, haunted house style.
"We are all going to die," I wailed, once we'd all stopped screaming.
Water trickled in through Ian's window and he quickly rolled it up. "Death by tour bus," Rowan sighed. Suddenly a terrible non-storm-related thought popped into my head, and I grabbed the back of Ian's seat.
"Ian, there's no way we're going to run into the wedding tour, right? Didn't Aunt Mel say they're touring Western Ireland?"
Ian made a little X with his fingers, which I guess was supposed to mean no.
"I hacked into Mom's email and printed out a copy of their itinerary. We aren't going to be anywhere near them."
"Hacked?" I said. "By that, do you mean you used her password?"
"Our mom either didn't know or care that you're supposed to change your passwords often. Archie had figured it out one December, and we'd been using it to track our Christmas presents ever since."
"Can you imagine if we ran into them?"
Ian shook his head.
"It's impossible. I scheduled our trip to make sure there was no possible way for us to run into them. Also, I don't know if that's our biggest concern right now,"
he said, pointing to the sky. His face was shamrock green. Suddenly a shot of ice-cold water trickled down my back and I catapulted forward.
"Cold!"
I screamed, water pouring down from my window. The inside of my window.
"Rowan! The car is leaking!"
He arched back just as the stream transformed from a trickle to a gush.
"No, Max said the new top was fine."
"What top? Who's Max?" I asked, like details would solve the fact that it was raining in the back seat.
"The guy who helped me repair."
"It's my window too,"
Ian yelped, his pitch identical to mine. He grabbed his handle, frantically trying to roll up his already rolled up window.
"Ian, that's not going to help," I said.
Rowan turned the key and jetted onto the road, and Clover responded by giving up on any attempt at being waterproof. Water flooded in through every possible crevice. We sped over a small bridge, water flowing in at full speed as we pulled into a tiny two-pump gas station. Ian frantically rolled down his window and stuck his head out, gasping like a beached flounder. I was soaked. Water pooled in the seat of my shorts, and my hair hung in stringy clumps.
"Did that really just happen?"
Rowan fell back against his seat.
"Addie, how do we fix it?" Ian asked.
Mechanic Addie to the rescue. I reached up to wiggle the roof, and beads of water tumbled in.
"Do we care about pretty?" I asked.
Rowan tapped his hand on the dashboard.
"Does it look like we care about pretty?" "Valid," I said. "We need tape. Really strong, thick tape."
Rowan nodded vigorously.
"Tape. Got it. I'll just pop in the shop and ask."
He grabbed a beanie from the cup holder and pulled it on as he sprinted for the gas station.
"We almost just drowned in a Volkswagen," Ian said, drumming his fingers on the dashboard. "Can you imagine the obituary?
Killer Car Traps Trio. Ian? I reached over to still his restless fingers. I had a theory that Ian had spent a previous life as a hummingbird, or an athletic coffee bean. What's up with Rowan's mom? He glanced back, his eyebrows bent.
What are you talking about?
Back at the gas station, I overheard him yelling at her. He said something about making a decision before the end of the summer.
Really?
Ian tucked a strand of hair into his mouth and chewed thoughtfully.
I don't know very much about his family. I didn't even know his parents were divorced until he brought it up back at the Burren.
Are you serious?
This was so my brother. All of my brothers. I wanted to know everything about my friends, right down to the name of their first pet and what toppings they liked on their pizza.
Lena claimed to remember our first sleepover as more of a police interrogation. My brothers, on the other hand, seemed to need only a few similarities to form a bond.
You like football and tacos? Me too.
Ian followed a bead of rain down the windshield with his finger.
Rowan and I don't talk a lot about stuff like that.
I rolled my eyes. Because you're too busy talking about title track?
No.
He blew his breath out loudly. I mean, of course we talk about music, but most of the time we talk about deeper stuff. Like about things we care about and what's bugging us. Stuff like that.
I couldn't help but grin.
So you're saying that you and Rowan talk about your feelings? Once Archie had asked me what Lena and I could possibly have to talk about on our multi-hour phone conversations, and I'd finally told him how we're feeling. Now, every time she called, they made fun of me. How's Lena? How are her feelings?
Yeah, I guess so, Ian admitted.
He flashed me a look that I recognized immediately. Eyes open and vulnerable. It was what I saw before he revealed something about himself.
Have you ever wished you could have someone see you without all the other layers? Like not how good you are at sports or school or being popular or whatever. They just see you.
I wanted to grab him by the shoulders and yell, "Are you kidding me?" Of course I'd felt that way. That was the defining feeling of my life.
Ian had felt that way?
This was news to me. Like, I could just be Addie instead of being Archie's slash Walter's slash Ian's little sister?
Exactly,
Ian said. Suddenly I realized something. Ian was talking to me like he used to. Like Cubby wasn't hanging out in the bruise under his eye. I chose my next words carefully, not wanting to break the spell. But the label thing is just part of being human, right? We like to categorize people, so everyone gets labels slapped on them whether they're right or not. I'd never thought about it that way before, but it was true. We even labeled ourselves. Bad at math. Flirt. Clueless.
They're never right, Ian said, a hint of venom in his voice.
Labels aren't big enough for people, and once you try to categorize someone, you stop looking for who they actually are. That's why I like talking to Rowan so much. We're friends, but completely out of context. I never thought someone I met online could be such a close friend, but I really needed a friend, and he was there. I waited for him to crack a smile on the "I needed a friend" part, but he just dropped his gaze to his lap, his knee bobbing. If Ian felt friendless, then the rest of us were doomed. We could barely go anywhere without someone yelling his name and wanting to talk about the football season. Kids, adults, everyone.
I didn't know you were feeling that way, I said carefully.
You could have told me.
His hair whipped back and forth. You were busy, with Lena and soccer and...
Cubby. He didn't have to say it.
We both averted our gazes. So... Rowan told me about the guidebook.
And? I said, careful to keep my voice neutral.
And I care about him, and I care about you. So if you guys think it will help you, then fine, I'm up for it.
He twisted around, his eyes fastening earnestly on mine.
But you know that following some guidebook around isn't actually dealing with what happened, right? It isn't going to make it go away.
My anger flared up,
hot and bubbly.
And telling Mom is? Getting our parents involved will just make things get bigger.
It's already getting bigger, Ian said, mounting his big brother soapbox.
Addie, at some point you're going to have to deal with it. Don't you want it to be on your own terms? Admit it. You're in over your head.
I wasn't just in over my head. I was gasping at the bottom of the pool.
But there was no way I was going to admit that.
I told you back at the Cliffs of Moher, I am done talking about this, I snapped.
Well, I'm not. Not until you do the right thing, he insisted.
The right thing.
The right thing had been to listen to Ian and trust my gut and ditch Cubby the second things had started to feel off.
But I hadn't done that, had I? It was too late now.
Ian, stop! I shouted.
Fine, he breathed, falling back against his seat moodily. Why did he have to ruin the moment? For a second there, things had felt almost normal between us. I didn't have to see the sign to know we were in Dingle, because Guidebook Lady's description was spot on. It was Alice in Wonderland meets Ireland, a mashup of charm and color spiked with whimsy. Stores with names like Mad Hatter's and the Little Cheese Shop lined the road in every color on the neon spectrum. Tangerine, cotton candy pink, turquoise, and lime. Rowan snaked carefully through the flooded cobblestone streets, talking a blue streak the entire time. Dingle is a huge draw for Irish teenagers. Every summer they come here for Irish camp. You learn Irish language, dances, that kind of thing. The peninsula was pretty cut off from the rest of the world for a while, so a lot of people here still speak Gaelic. The talking had started as soon as Rowan came out of the gas station with the tape and picked up on the tension between Ian and me. He was obviously someone who tried to bury conflict underneath a lot of words. Even if we'd wanted to get a word in edgewise, we couldn't have.
That's cool, Ian finally said, hedging his way into a rare silence. Our argument had sapped the energy out of both of us. Ian was crunched up into a little ball, buried in his phone. And I was slumped against my window, my anger dissolving into sadness.
So, you're sure you guys are okay? Rowan asked the quiet car.
Rowan, we're fine. My voice came out more forcefully than I meant it to, and a shadow covered his face. Ian shot me an annoyed look. Poor Rowan. He hadn't asked for this. I straightened up, swallowing my tone. Sorry about that, Rowan. Thanks for filling us in on the history. So what's this next title track stop about?
I snuck a glance at Ian's map.
Sleahead?
Ah, this one's kind of brilliant, Rowan said, doing the double-handed glasses move. When Title Track first started, they signed with a tiny record label called Sleahead Records. It doesn't exist anymore, but the place it was named after does. It also happens to be one of my favorite places in Ireland, because of Irish camp, right? I said, to prove that I had been listening to his monologue.
Right, he beamed.
The road led us through town, and onto a windy road that thinned until we were sandwiched between a hill and a cliff. Thick, fluffy fog billowed on the road, and the ocean all but disappeared into the distance. We kept traveling farther and farther out on the peninsula. And just when I thought we'd dive straight into the ocean, Rowan bumped off the road, stopping at the base of a steep hill where a goat trail snaked its way up to the top.
Here?
I said.
Here, Ian confirmed, his knee starting in on one of its specialty spastic dances.
Too much wind, Rowan grunted, struggling against the door.
Finally he managed to pry it open, dousing us all with a salty spray of rain.
"Please tell me we're not going out there," I said. But Ian was already scrambling over the console, following Rowan out into the mist, and I followed quickly behind. It's not like the situation inside the car was much drier. Outside was wet and freezing, and the view was even more intense. The water shimmered a deep turquoise, and a thick afghan of clouds rested on gently sloping hills.
All the colors looked oversaturated, especially the green. Before Ireland, I thought I knew what green was, but I hadn't, not really. "This way," Rowan said, pointing to the unbelievable